Well, on this episode of MSU Today, we're going to take another look at arguably the most important theme in the MSU 2030 strategic plan, of which there are six themes. This would be the student success theme. Bill Beekman is here. He's our vice president for strategic initiatives. Bill is responsible for overseeing the implementation of the plan. And we're so happy to have three more Spartans back to talk about it. We have Amy Martin, the assistant dean for student success strategy. Renata Opachinski is the assistant provost for undergraduate student success. And Aaron Carter is the chief of staff for student life and engagement. It's great to have you all here. And Bill, take it away.
Well, thanks so much, Russ, and thanks all for joining us today. Russ, as you said, our strategic plan, the first theme area is student success. It's very intentionally the first theme area. Student success is critical to what we do at Michigan State. And so our three guests today are all involved in student success in slightly different ways. And so very excited to have you all with us today. But I think that when we think about student success in our strategic planning process, it's a little bit unfair because our focus on student success didn't start 3 years ago. It started over 160 years ago. But I'm not going to hold you all accountable for what we've done for 160 years. But could you talk a little bit about, where we've been headed over the years and a little bit of the background that maybe gets us up to today, and then we'll spend a little bit of time talking about our current initiatives.
I'd like to get us started by just recognizing that at MSU, student success work has been in pockets all across campus for a long time, like you've said. And really one of the first moments we wanted to talk about in coming into a cohesive space is the creation of the neighborhoods concept and the related student success teams that started over 10 years ago as part of our residence hall renovations. So this was a collaborative effort led by leaders in the provost's office, student affairs, and residence life to try to build better relationships among the colleges, provost's office, housing, and student life with a focus on better supporting students' academic success. Currently, those neighborhoods exist in the format as the Neighborhood Student Success Collaborative, and you know them as engagement centers in each of the residence hall neighborhoods. And they're really committed to supporting undergraduate student success with a focus on academic achievement, helping people navigate the institution, create a sense of belonging. And that's really a crucial interface between the student experience and the resources that we have on campus.
So, for example, if I'm a student in Case Hall, as I was 30 years ago, but if I were a student in Case Hall today, and I, what services could I find in my South neighborhood?
Yeah, some of the services you'll find in the engagement centers are academic advising. There's also varying tutoring at different times of day, so math tutoring, other specific tutoring. Some of the neighborhoods even have health and well-being, so nurse triage kind of stations you can go if you're starting to feel sick and need to know if you should go over to Olin.
Which is really super nice because it's, in my example, I didn't pick it intentionally, but it's a long way to Olin. And yeah. So, somebody might think, oh, gee, I'll just sort of hunker down and, gallop so far to get over there. And if I'm a younger student, or really anybody, you may not have a vehicle to go to an urgent care or what have you. So those services right where you live can make a big difference. And a person who is ill may then miss a day or two of class, and you sort of cascade into a potential set of problems. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you can get that care quickly and even get a triage appointment, to know, kind of where you stand from a health perspective, you can get better faster. So having that service right there in the in your immediate vicinity, I'm sure makes a huge difference.
Yeah, we also, the good work that began with the neighborhoods also led to an invitation to join the University Innovation Alliance in 2014. And MSU is a proud founding and continuing member of the UIA. And that's a partnership and collaboration with other public research institutions that with a goal to help increase graduation rates for first generation and lower income students. So we continue to this day to host a UIA fellow, just recruited our newest one to come on board for a 3-year cycle. She'll begin later this year.
Yes.
Very soon.
Very soon. Yes.
And so those that team gets together, our MSU team gets together with others in the alliance to explore best practices, learn from each other, figure out how we collectively might improve the graduation rates and persistence rates of students really across the country.
That's correct.
Yeah, yes. And to learn kind of innovative practices that other institutions are doing and see if we can scale that across the whole alliance. So we might be able to say, here's something really great and innovative we're doing at MSU, and we're having these preliminary successful results. And then other institutions would become interested, and then we'd kind of scale it across the UIA institutions to kind of say, okay, how does it work at a school like ours, at a more urban school, at a school that's a little smaller, maybe a school that has a different focus, is into land grant, et cetera. There's great diversity in the UIA institutions. So it allows us to kind of find this promising practice, do a larger pilot across the institutions, and then the goal is to share it across higher ed broadly.
And I think that's something that might surprise folks a little bit, but certainly people within the university community know that some of our greatest resources are our fellow universities.
Yes,
and
yes.
I know in my career, when I was the director of the Alumni Association, for example, you had an issue of any sort, you could just pick up the phone and call other alumni directors in the Big Ten, and people would just be so supportive and helpful. And we'd get together and talk about best practices. Mm-hmm. And that happens in so many places throughout the university, whether it's the UIA or our Big Ten peers or our AAU counterparts, that there really is a huge community of people trying to think about how to, how to bring success to our students and their work. So this is really an awesome start, but I want to sort of bring us a little bit to present day. And I think when we think about student success, the first thing that comes to people's minds is, well, what is a student? A student is somebody in a classroom with a faculty member, listening to a lecture and then writing a paper or taking a test, and that's kind of the student experience. And and while that is certainly true, it's also sort of a fairly narrow definition of what student success is. And so with three student success experts in the studio today, how do you define student success? I suspect much more broadly than that narrow definition.
Yes, definitely. And I think we have come to some shared ideas of student success over time at MSU. So we have lots of people who have been meeting in different groups. We have a campus student success group. We have student life and engagement has a leadership team. We have teams of associate and assistant deans across the colleges that are meeting. Enrollment and admission strategy groups that have been meeting. And over the years, we've gravitated towards 5 areas of success that we often talk about when we're planning or trying to implement something. And I did some research last semester and matched those 5 areas of success with the national research and literature. So we kind of confirmed we're moving in the right direction. And then these 5 areas make it easier for us to talk about all those things, Bill, that you mentioned in terms of what's beyond just classroom learning. And we think about these five areas both in terms of strategy and initiatives, which is why we're here today, but also in everyday practice of advisors and instructors. So I'll walk you through them because we've been doing this with our parents and families during the admissions process, and it kind of, I think, helps people think conceptually about what we're trying to do. So the first area that we talk about is self-discovery of purpose. And this is really about students understanding their personal passion and goals, their academic aspirations, and why they're in college. Like, why are they doing this? And we try to help them to think about those things as they're choosing a major or making choices about what they want to study. So that's a kind of starting place for students to be successful. And then we also talk about educational success, which is more in line with what you started to talk about. It's both academic success, but it's also about student learning. And the areas of campus that really impact this might surprise you. So it is about the academic units, the colleges and the classroom, but it's also our math learning centers that are in each of the neighborhoods. It's the writing center. It's other academic support services that we offer, right? Learning happens there. It's also about how the professors teach class and what subjects they cover, and are they being inclusive of different perspectives and ideas in that class? Are they bringing them in? Can students see their communities and families in those classes? And finally, educational success is also about just navigating academic policy so students can get through and get their degree on time. Another area of success we often talk about, and I think more and more talk about, is developing sense of belonging for students. So this is a psychological concept, and it's really about feeling welcomed and validated, like you have a place on campus. So helping students find that organization or that group that really supports them. And we know this is really important because the research shows that if students have a sense of belonging, that they actually do better in the classroom. So that's another area that we focus on. The fourth area is about contributing to an empowered community. And this is all about creating an interdependent learning culture. We know that students learn best often when they're with others or talking with others. And this is focused on doing that in a respectful manner, teaching students empathy, how to talk across difference, how they make a difference in their community, their academic community in particular. And finally, we talk about, this is something we talk about often, right? Like the nurses in the engagement center. So health and well-being is an important aspect of student life. So that's about individual fulfillment and feeling good, right? But it's also about stability. Do you have the basic needs? You have food, shelter. Is college affordable for you? Are you dealing with test anxiety? Do you need support for, you know, that? Do you need support for taking care of your family? Because we have students who are parents or are caring for other family members. So we know that all of that matters for students being academically successful.
So that's a really wonderful description of the, if you sort of think of it as a fabric and all of those threads mm-hmm. really intertwined, hold that mm-hmm. fabric together. Yeah. And without any one of those elements, it becomes much more challenging to be a successful student, to be a successful learner, to take advantage of all the resources that we have to offer at Michigan State. And so thinking of it in that very holistic way really gives our students the greatest opportunity for success, and us the opportunity to support them in that mm-hmm. success. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's really a wonderful way to look at it beyond that sort of narrow four corners of the classroom. So as we think about the implementation of our strategic plan in this mm-hmm. theme area, what are some of the examples of projects that y'all are tackling in some of those five areas?
Yeah, there's a lot happening around student success on campus. So we've been tracking a ton of initiatives over the years, and we're really excited to get to talk about some of them here with you and your listeners. So, you know, thinking about kind of that traditional student success definition around educational success as we're thinking about it, there's kind of three buckets that the work happening falls into. So one is around course reform, in particular around our introductory gateway courses. So we know that if students are not successful in those first math course, that first writing course, it sets them behind because there's so many other courses that come after that introductory course. So, you know, for years, our faculty and instructional staff have really been doing a lot of work in math and physics and biology and writing to redesign these courses with student learning in mind, and in particular, kind of promoting promising practice in teaching. So I'm particularly excited right now, especially as we've just hired our new director of the Teaching Center. And he really comes to this work from a student success framework. So I think we'll see a lot of great work happening that's building on the great work that has already happened kind of in that course reform, thinking about that individual course and how we can make it better for students.
And I think that's a really important point that that emphasizes a philosophy that we have at MSU that that may be surprising. I think that many people think that a student sort of, you know, in the traditional way that probably many of our students' parents experienced college, mm-hmm, you sort of go into a classroom, mm-hmm, and a professor who probably has 10 research projects he or she is really worried about sort of suffers through teaching a class. And and I think what's really extraordinary to me is that we have an emphasis on how to teach, how to share material, how to have that material better be understood by the listener, how to create a sort of relationship with your students in a way that that the responsibility for learning comes from both sides. If the classroom is to be successful, the student has to be a learner, but the teacher also has to be a good teacher. Mm-hmm. And so the emphasis on that, I think, may come as a surprise to some of our, I'll say our listeners who were graduates of many decades ago. But that emphasis is, I think, is probably transformative in how we think about higher education.
Absolutely. And I think the key part there, too, is also that our faculty are key partners in student success, mm-hmm, on other institutions. Or I think when people think about it, there's the kind of faculty side and then there's the student success side. And here at MSU, we're very lucky because our faculty do see themselves engaged in student, mm-hmm, success work and understand that the work they do in the classroom and, you know, in the curricular, co-curricular spaces are a key factor of student success, and they want to be engaged. They attend our student success meetings. Mm-hmm. They come to different initiatives. They sit on work groups. They really are a very active partner, and we're very fortunate because when I talk with other, like we talked about, when we meet with other institutions, they don't have that. They don't, their faculty really maybe aren't quite as engaged and supportive as we are. So we're very fortunate at MSU to have, mm-hmm, that. And, you know, our faculty aren't just thinking about those individual courses. The other thing we're thinking around educational success is around those curricular. So not just the one course, but kind of what is that curricular path students take? What are all the courses, the sum of their experience at MSU? And we're really working on some redesigns there, too. So we're thinking about creating a Bachelor of General Studies course and expanding our credit for prior learning opportunities, both of which would really allow residents in Michigan who may be stopped out, so what we call some college no degree students, to be able to come back to MSU. And I'm really excited about, mm-hmm, that because it aligns with Governor Whitmer's 60 by 30 goal, which is to have 60% of residents have an academic credential by 2030. And so being able to help students find a path back into MSU, or for some of our current students as well, who maybe started after working for some time or have a very unique academic aspiration as they think about their purpose. They say, I want to do this. There's not a major that aligns with that. So the Bachelor of General Studies or some of our integrated majors in the colleges would allow them to design that major that fits their needs. The example I always give is a student who wanted to open up their own gym. So they've been serving, working as a personal trainer for a while. They came back to MSU and wanted to open up their own gym. And they were debating, do I get a business degree? Do I get a kinesiology degree? Do I get a marketing degree? What's going to set me up for success here? And if we were able to design this major for them, they could take courses in each of those majors and really learn all of the skills they need to be able to be a successful manager of a gym.
And so taking something that, you know, a person who maybe for whatever reason came to Michigan State or some other university, got a couple of years of education, for whatever reason had to leave, it could be very, very intimidating thinking about how do I sort of re-enter this very complex environment. Is it even possible? And Renata, what you're talking about is turning that really and flipping it on its head from this very sort of potentially scary experience to an experience where not only can you do it, but we can tailor a program specifically to your needs that will help you be successful in, you know, whatever area of interest you have. And so it flips from, I think, sort of terrifying to extraordinarily welcoming and creating opportunity.
Absolutely. And that's what we talk a lot about when we think about some of these student success reforms is how do we become welcoming for X student? If that's the some college, no degree, if that's a transfer student, if that's a first gen student, if that's an international student, we want students to see MSU as a friendly and welcoming space. So they see that community, they feel that sense of belonging. And that means we have to transform the institution. I know you had Mark on, and he talks about that a lot, right? We need to change the institution to be what our students need from us, and that's on us. And, you know, the way I think about that is that then means we need to be a transfer welcoming institution, you know, et cetera, to really help students see, oh, I'm wanted here. They have policies and structures that work for me and my needs. I want to attend MSU because of that. So another kind of area in educational success, I warned you we could talk a lot about these, but so another area of educational success is around what we call high impact practices. This is a national term. And these are kind of curricular and co-curricular experiences that have been proven to support student success on campus. And we're actually very well known for some of the high impact practices we offer, in particular our educational broad program and our undergraduate research are nationally known programs. So we're really focused on kind of creating equitable opportunities for participation. We know we do these really well, but not everyone has the opportunity to participate. So for instance, we have a program called Pathways to Research, which is small cohorts of students who are interested in undergraduate research. They get support and mentorship to understand what it is, how to find an undergraduate research opportunity. They get prep for that interview with the faculty member. And it's actually had great success in placing students in undergraduate research opportunities.
I think that's a really wonderful concept. It takes me back to my days when I was in the College of Human Medicine. And I always found it fascinating whenever I would get in a conversation with one of our physicians, is somebody's a urologist or a neurologist or a nephrologist or whatever specialty they might be, a radiologist. And I would always ask them, why did you choose that specialty as compared to the multitude of other things you could do? And to a person, it was always an experience outside the classroom mm-hmm. that caused them to land. Whether it was a unique relationship they developed with a faculty member who was a great mentor, who happened to be a whatever. Mm-hmm. or an opportunity to round with maybe a family friend who was a physician who had a particular specialty, and they gravitated towards that. But it was rarely, gee, I was reading my textbook and this seemed cool. It was always some out-of-classroom experience. And so I think that we maybe tend to undervalue those, but they can be the, for all of the learning that occurs in the classroom, the linchpin to opportunity or awareness of career opportunities and things like that that may be life-altering. So,
yeah, absolutely. And I think that's actually a really great segue into one of our other areas of student success, which is the self-discovery of purpose. And exactly what you're saying, we understand students find their purpose mm-hmm. in so many different spaces, and most of it is kind of outside of that classroom experience. And so, you know, when we think about self-discovery of purpose, as Amy noted, it's about supporting the development of students identifying those core values, their academic aspirations. Why are they in education? What do they want to get out of it? And I will say at MSU, no one does this better than our advisors. And that's both kind of our college-based academic advisors, but also our supplemental advisors that exist either in the academic spaces or in our student life and engagement. I know for me, when I was an undergrad student, my student organization advisor was my big mentor. He is who helped me kind of succeed in undergrad and helped kind of me find my passion and purpose and my direction for life. So advisors in all of those different spaces are really pivotal to students. And in particular, when we think about discovery of purpose, one of the things, you know, I was personally shocked to learn is, you know, students choose a major. And then 15% of them almost change before they even enroll for classes. So in new student orientation, NSO as we call it, they change there's a little option and they change their major in that moment. So over the summer before they start. And then, as I think is a little more commonly known, almost 75% change once they have started classes at some point in their college career. So MSU is really, you know, focused on that and is committed to expanding our advising resources and making sure that all students have the opportunity to meet with advisors to think through that sense of purpose. Because like we said, I think they really are that key space where those conversations happen.
I think really interesting. So many students change their major, and you know, one of the conversations that I was having some months ago with Dr. Largent was this notion that while students change their major, they often don't change it sort of in a 180 degree kind of way. So a student that comes in as a biochem major may be interested eventually in being a physiology major, probably not going to turn into an English major. Maybe occasionally, but
an anomaly.
but quite unusual. And so thinking about how we don't have to necessarily facilitate an easy transition from biochem to poli-sci, but we were well served to make it easier within the science spectrum or within the liberal arts spectrum to make it easier to change those majors as people adjust and facilitate getting them to graduate in a reasonable time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in our exploratory preference unit, so our university advising that sits in the provost's office, they have moved to that kind of idea. They create interest areas. And so, you know, like you were saying, oftentimes students might change their major, but it stays within kind of that interest area, if it's STEM or if it's business, et cetera. And so it creates those pathways and students' opportunity to move in there. And in that same space, some of our colleges are really working to kind of help align their curriculum as they're noticing students' pathways between colleges. And they're saying, okay, we have a lot of students moving from X major into our Y major. Let's think about where does our curriculum align? Where does it not? How do we maybe create smoother pathways? So So I get really excited when our college partners think about it in that way, because it helps show that they're recognizing not all students start and stay with us. We do have some majors where there's actually very little movement, but for the vast majority of our major, students are moving in and out of each of those majors almost, you know, all the time. Every semester someone is shifting. One of the, you know, the thing that is kind of common across most majors is that they have to take an introductory writing course. And so one of the things I really like to highlight is some of the work that our writing faculty are doing in this kind of sense of purpose, because they recognize 80% of students take these introductory writing courses. And so they've really embedded in that writing course a focus on purpose. And so they're having students, as part of the work in the courses, kind of think about what are your goals? What are your values? What are your passions? Why are you in higher education? Which I think is so lovely, because when I took writing, it was like, read this book and like write about it. Tell me what's the key theme, and like write a paper that proves a point or something. And so I love that these faculty said, oh gosh, you know, yes, we need students to learn to write and how to write different forms, but we can also think about their success and their purpose here. And so they have been really pivotal partners in helping us kind of embed this into the curriculum that almost every student takes. The last thing with purpose that I want to highlight is around our Spartan Experience record. So this is the co-curricular record we have on campus, and it's a phenomenal resource for students to be able to explore that purpose, and in particular how their curricular and co-curricular experiences are helping set them up for their career path. So we have over 10,000 students already participating in the Spartan Experience record, and we really hope to bring that even to more students. All students have the opportunity, and it's just about helping students understand the benefit that this record provides for them to make those connections to their purpose and kind of career direction.
So, Erin, I want to throw it back to you for a minute as the student life and engagement part of this triad of student success wisdom. I think people would be surprised to learn about the sort of pervasive nature of your unit on our campus. The many sort of the many threads that ripple through the fabric of the university that are impacted by your area. What are the things from a, and your area really focuses on, we've talked about some classroom-oriented, sort of more traditionally academic things. What are the things that you and your team are thinking about, worried about in the, how you think about student success in this model that Amy so articulately laid out across the 5 points?
Yeah, some of the places where I think we spend a lot of time that we wanted to highlight relative to Amy's themes, the theme she laid out relates to the empowering communities and helping people find those communities. One of the areas I wanted to highlight that is part of student life and engagement is the Inclusive Campus Initiative, or ICI. This was something started in 2021 out of our office, and it's meant to be a ground-up approach to implementing diversity, equity, and inclusion practices that help center on advocacy of marginalized students. And centering around those students in the sense of helping them build community, so build feelings of belonging and connectivity, but also increasing their access and understanding of the policies and practices and support resources and opportunities that are available that help them in student success. We have dedicated staff person that runs that program, Megan Kozar, and she's amazing at helping those students feel very, very connected, not only to herself, but to the advisors that serve in that Inclusive Campus Initiative. So that's one way. Another thing I wanted to talk about relates in that same theme relates to applying or utilizing in greater ways a restorative justice approach to some of our conflict resolution. Right, student success definitely has times where things maybe don't go as we hope. And instead of thinking about kind of the wrongdoing from the lens of the person who has committed the wrongdoing, restorative justice thinks about the harm that was caused and the harmed parties, and an opportunity for all parties involved to come together in trying to reach a solution that has the person who or the entity that had the wrongdoing understand that harm and feel an obligation to help repair it. And so notions of applying restorative justice is a way that's a more holistic approach and brings all parties together in finding that solution as opposed to pitting one party against another in a more punitive manner. And so it really shows pays high dividends in terms of people feeling cared for and people feeling heard on all parties. And so it's a great resource and a great way that we approach our Office of Student Support and Accountability.
It does bring to mind the breadth of what we think about in terms of student success, how the university has so much that it offers in so many different ways. And I think that coming to an institution where there are roughly 50,000 students, it would be very easy to feel isolated or alone. And yet there are so many opportunities for community that I think when people find that niche, that community, at that point, you can take advantage of the multitude of resources and opportunities and experiences, and at the same time have a sense of a smaller community that is very supportive, and that support just I use the analogy of a fabric, but it really creates threads of a fabric that weave together to make student success what it is. So what I'd like to do as we wrap up this really wonderful conversation is I always like to try and ask a fun and interesting question of our guests. So tied to our sort of student success theme, you all are multiple degree holders from multiple universities of higher education. I'll ask you, what was something, as you think back on your academic career, that was a pivotal turning point or moment that as you reflect on who you are today and the really extraordinary work that you all are doing, that was a light bulb moment or an aha moment for you? What sort of triggered that in your academic career? Amy, I'll start with you.
You want to start with me? Sure. I can easily talk about that. So I went into my bachelor's degree program thinking I would get a degree in psychology and a PhD in psychology and become a child behavioral psychologist. Very specific when I came in, right? And a few courses in, I started to realize maybe that's not what I really wanted to do every day. And I was really influenced by, at my institution at the time, we were engaged in dialogues. So there were some racial incidents happening on campus, and they had us in the residence halls have conversations about what was going on. And through that, I started to learn that there are residence assistants in the halls and students, other student mentors, right, who could support you in the halls along your journey. And they were helping to lead these conversations. And I learned a lot about other people as a psychology major, right? I was interested in how other people think and how they, are motivated. And I really started to understand that while I had my own challenges, that I had a lot of privilege And that there were others on campus who were having a more difficult time navigating the university environment. And I became an RA, and that was life-changing for me. And that led to a career in counseling for college students, and then working in housing and residence life. So I came out of that, and eventually a degree in higher ed policy and leadership. But that moment of having those conversations in the residence hall was definitely life-changing for me.
You know, I don't know if I have a moment. I think, like I said earlier, for me, it was about the relationships I built. And in particular, I'll say for me, I was part of an organization called TRIP, Travel Recreation Program is what it stood for. And it was a student organization, and we were trained leaders, and we took other students on outdoor adventure trips. So we would take them whitewater rafting or hiking or rock climbing or whatever kind of the activity might be. And in that organization, it's where I learned kind of what my purpose and passions were. And I realized I really enjoy working with students. I ended up being the director for a couple years and getting to mentor and train the underclassmen. And it helped fuel this kind of passion for the impact higher education can have. And so for me, and that's where my mentor that I noted earlier, he was the advisor of that organization, and being able to have those conversations with him and learn this is a field I could go into. Because mm-hmm. I was the anomaly. Like, I changed majors into a very weird pattern. I was an aerospace engineer major, then I became a psychology major, then I went pre-health, and then I went law. Like, I really could not figure out what I wanted to do. And, you know, it was that mentor who helped me say, well, you can do all those kind of things in one space. It's called higher education. Let me tell you about this field. And so being able to have my eyes open to, oh, I could actually do this for a career, and this is this passion I have mm-hmm. for working with students, and this passion I have for developing organizations and creating policies, you know, he really helped me kind of understand that as a field, and I wouldn't be where I am today without him.
I, similar to Amy, went into college thinking I was going to be a physical therapist, and so spent my undergraduate career pursuing that and graduating with a bachelor's of science in physical therapy, and a plan to do clinicals and all the good things that come with that, and I did all those things, but all along with that, I also did a whole nother life of student activities. So I was in a sorority, I was a president of Habitat for Humanity, I was in a bunch of organizations, student government, living that life alongside a very stringent physical therapy life. And when I graduated, I happened to be talking to a person that was our student government advisor about that I really loved physical therapy and I loved helping people, but I really didn't love the idea of dealing with insurance entities and all of the pieces of the mm-hmm. medical field that is the insurance mess. And so I was like, how can I help people and help people do what they want to do in other ways? And I really loved my college experience. Can I just stay in college forever? And similar to Renata, she was like, actually, you can go into a field yes. called student affairs in higher education. And so that led me to pursuing graduate education and a PhD in higher education and student affairs. I mean, I picked my graduate institution, the University of South Carolina, because I got off the plane in Columbia, South Carolina. There were rocking chairs and palm trees in the airport and a very lovely student that greeted me. And I was like, I'm just going to come here because it's different than my home state. But the point is similar about relationships and the relationships and the comfort mm-hmm. and the belonging I felt all through mm-hmm. college, and understanding that you can have a career in this space. And that has just allowed me to move forward in lots of ways, and then also be your person. If you tweak something on the weekend, I can take a look at your foot, your ankle, your knee.
Well, I didn't appreciate that, but there's a newfound knowledge there. That's wonderful. Well, we have three wonderful guests today, and all extraordinary students in your own right who have paid it forward by focusing your career on the success of others. So thank you so much for joining us, Renetta, Amy, and Aaron. And Russ, I will turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Bill. Yes, that is Bill Beekman, MSU's Vice President for Strategic Initiatives, talking with Amy Martin, the Assistant Dean for Student Success Strategy. Renetta Opachinski is the Assistant Provost for Undergraduate Student Success. And Aaron Carter is the Chief of Staff for Student Life and Engagement. Much more about everything we've talked about simply at strategicplan.msu.edu. And I'm Russ White. This is MSU Today.